I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So we want to do we'll do a little bit of question and answer here as far as coronavirus, health concerns, and that kind of deal. If you have any questions, you can text it in 67974 on the text line. But my cousin is a doctor. Okay, he's a very good doctor. Apparently, look at his bio. My God, Dr. Benjamin Raby. Okay, you hear me? Okay.
I hear you great.
Hey, there we go. Good to talk to you. Well, my cousin is Dr. Benjamin Raby, and he is chief of the Division of Pulmonary Medicine at Boston Children's Hospital.
You are really the black sheep of the family, is what we've learned here today.
Oh, my God. Well, his team and others at Boston Children's...
But hold on a second. Okay. He's got a ring.
Yo, so... I got two. Why are you trying to shortchange?
Yeah,
I got two. That's right. Well, his team and others at Boston Children's and Harvard are, you know, they've been gearing up to confront the coronavirus pandemic. So I wanted to get you on here and, you know, figure we could ask you a few questions, all right, maybe get some answers. So first things first, what are your thoughts on, you know, I hear there's some doctors out there, and specifically I keep hearing, like, from Dr. Drew, okay? Everybody knows Dr. Drew. He used to do that Loveline show with Adam Carolla. He does the reality shows. There are some doctors like him where they're kind of downplaying how serious everything is right now. So when you hear about that, Benji, like, does that make you cringe? Like, what's your current stance right now on how serious we all need to be about everything?
We need to be really serious about it. I just hope he doesn't get it. That's all I can say. I think people really have to be very careful and take this extremely seriously. We haven't seen something like this in literally 100 years, since the time of the Spanish flu back in 1918. This virus spreads before people are symptomatic. You'll hear all kinds of rumors about, you know, what the timing is. The truth is people shouldn't be thinking so much in terms of timing and just thinking that this thing spreads without people knowing it, without people knowing that they're infected. And we know that while the vast majority of people, meaning about 80% of people, are going to get it, are going to clear it and not really have any problems with it, 20% of people will get sick. And of those, about 10% are going to be in the hospital. And we're going to lose potentially a lot of people, particularly the elderly. It's a serious thing. And anybody in the media who is saying otherwise, and physicians who are trying to speculate that this is not a big deal, it's no different than the flu, are really misinformed and doing a disservice to everybody.
Now, you mentioned the timeline there and to not pay attention to it. I know that this strain of the coronavirus right now, we don't know much about it from what I understand because it's new even to the medical community. But I am curious to know, do we know anything about the timeline in terms of how long people are contagious for? Because I have heard all different things. I have heard a couple days to, you know, 35 days that people might be contagious for. And the reason I ask that, Doc, is because at this point, I think we're starting to trend in a direction where we're all going to be, you know, a person away. We're all going to know somebody who has tested positive for the coronavirus. And I think a lot of people are going to wonder, hey, I was around so-and-so 3-4 weeks ago. Am I in the danger zone or not?
That's right. So it's a very hard question to answer because, like you said, we're just learning about this right now. Here's what we know for sure, okay? Number one, the virus spreads in what are called droplets, okay? So when we have infections that emerge from the lungs that are respirable, that are breathable, inhalable, they're usually passed in two ways. One is through droplets, where the virus is inside, like droplets that like come from the moisture of your breathing, or they could be in the sneeze or those types of things. And that's how coronavirus spreads. It's in droplet. The other way is airborne. And for airborne, that means the virus is floating without needing any droplets. Now, the good thing is that because coronavirus is droplet-based, the droplets are under the influence of gravity, and so they fall to the ground pretty quickly. So it's only within a few feet of someone that you can get infected directly by that person, okay? We are not as concerned, if you're across the room from somebody, we're not as concerned about the droplets getting all the way over to the other end of the room. If it was an airborne infection, it would be a different story. So that's the good news. The bad news about droplets is when they hit the ground or they hit the desk or they get on your skin, you can then touch other things and the droplets stay there. And we now know, there's a study that was published 2 days ago in the New England Journal of Medicine, that they have shown that the coronavirus is stable on surfaces for about 72 hours, so 3 days.
Wow.
Right? Aye, so that's why, it's really important to not, when you go out, to not be touching things that other people have touched. So door handles, elevator buttons, in the shoppings, in the grocery store, the carts, you want to wipe those down or wear gloves. So that's the first thing. To get to the timing, very briefly, we know that people can be infected for up to 7 days before showing symptoms. And we think that infectivity, the ability to pass it on, probably starts pretty early. So it's up to 5 to 7 days before you start having symptoms. And then we think it's another 7 to 12 days after that that a person is infectious. Okay. There are some reports that there are some people that will still have evidence of the virus even a month later, but we don't know yet if that, what we're seeing, is live virus that could be passed on, or if it's just remnants of the virus. So currently we're working on the assumption that it's about 12 days. And so that's why you hear all this thing about 2 weeks.
Okay. Where are we as far as the testing kits are concerned? Because Amber was telling me during the break here that was it South Korea you were saying?
Yeah, that South Korea and the U.S., they both had their first confirmed case of coronavirus on the same day. Something like 250,000 people in South Korea have been tested for COVID-19 at this point, as opposed to 25,000 people in the United States.
So what do we know?
Time period.
Yeah. So what do we know about that, Benji?
Right. So the reason for the discrepancy is that South Korea is really different from almost everywhere else in the world, because South Korea, after the swine flu epidemic a while back, being a neighbor of China, they put into place this plan that if ever something like this happened again, they would be able to act really quickly. So they got ahead of this faster than anybody else, and they used the first kits that were developed and were approved by the World Health Organization. Unfortunately, there was a decision made early on, and it's not clear to me exactly who made that decision, but that we weren't going to use World Health Organization testing here in the U.S. and that we were going to use the various kits that were going to be made through the CDC. That ended up being a mistake, because the CDC kit, for some reason that's not yet clear to any of us, wasn't appropriate right at the get-go, so they had to call those back and start manufacturing again. We're now at so that explains the delay and why so few tests have been done. The really good news is, and this is really good news, is that we've now ramped up in many cities through both assistance from government, but also through various private companies that make microbiological and genetic testing. Kits are being made available, and the number of tests that we're going to be able to do is really ramping up. So I can't speak for all over the U.S., but I know, for example, in Massachusetts, whereas we were only able to do about 400 tests a day 2 days ago, by the end of the week, by today or by Monday, we're going to be able to do several thousand a day across the state. So I think the same is going to be true elsewhere as well.
Okay. All right.
So I'm curious about this. Is it possible that the virus has been here longer than we know it's been here? Because I did see this one article that was discussing that there's been this uptick in people over the last few months before we had our first confirmed case in January, that even in November and December, there was an uptick of people in the U.S., particularly in certain areas like Seattle, going to doctors and to emergency rooms with flu-like symptoms and then testing negative for influenza A and B. And so some people are theorizing that they actually had COVID-19 and didn't know it because nobody was talking about it yet in this country. Do you think that's possible?
It is possible. I think that it's unlikely that cases in early November could be attributed to that. But we'll have to see that the granularity of that. That's going to take a while to figure out because we're starting to get a really good sense of what the timeline was in China. We know that the virus originated from there. The way we know that is because of tracing the genetics of the virus as it mutates. And those mutations, by the way, don't make it necessarily more virulent or less. It's just a way of tracking where the strains come from. So we know that the first cases and this first strain came from there. We think that it was in late to mid-December when those cases started to emerge. But it is very likely that the virus came here in late December or early January at the latest. And I don't think that it would be unreasonable to think that there are some people who had symptoms that was related to this. But that actually just goes to the point that the vast majority of people who get this are going to have, mild symptoms to none. And so while everybody's worried about getting it, it's really unlikely that any one person is going to really have a terrible outcome from it. Having said that, I think the really important thing for people to understand is who is at particular risk, both for themselves and also to help other people avoid getting it. So we know for sure that this virus really makes big problems for people over the age of 70 and really in their 80s. If we look at things like ICU admissions and mortality rates, they are several times higher in the elderly compared to younger people, okay? So if you look at Italy, for example, right now, mm-hmm. the average age of people who are dying from this is 78, 79 years old. And that's very similar to what's been seen in China. And at the beginning of the outbreak here, one of the real misfortunes was that the first cases were from an outbreak in a nursing home. And you can imagine what a virus like this would do in a nursing home where you have so many old people. So that's why it's really important for your young listeners to really protect their older family members by staying away from them. It's great to want to visit mom and dad. Don't bring everybody over to visit grandma and grandpa. Video, Skype with them, FaceTime with them. It'll do them a lot better than having people around. The older population should really protect themselves as much as possible.
Finally,
go ahead.
I was going to say, and finally, from a sports perspective, if I could fit in a sports question here, when would you think it's going to start to become safe for us to get sports going again, either without fans in the arena? Where we're at a place where we'll test all the players before they start playing and bumping into each other. And then to eventually, when can we get to a point where we could start, filling up the arenas and stadiums again, do you think?
Right. So I don't know. I will say that I'm pessimistic that it's going to be anytime soon. Certainly, we aren't going to want to have fans in an arena for multiple months, okay? Multiple months. I do not anticipate that we're going to see the NBA season play out with fans, the NHL season, no fans. Baseball, it depends what they decide to do. And I would hope that by the fall we can get fans in the stands again for the NFL, but I really don't even know about that. What I will say in terms of players being able to play, in order to do that safely, and, you know, it's true we want to be entertained, but we also want to make sure that our sports, you know, heroes are safe and, you know, able to entertain us in the future and take care of themselves and their families. We would have to have a system in place where you could screen very reliably on a regular basis to make sure that every player who's out there isn't themselves contaminated, infected, and potentially infecting their colleagues and teammates. So once testing is really readily available and we have no issues about demand for testing, then we will have the luxury of potentially being able to test all the players on a very regular basis. And I think it would be great at some point to have that outlet because people are going to be at home and they need entertainment. We want to keep people safe at home.
Amber, my cousin's very smart.
Listen, Zaslow, tell your cousin he's a very busy man,
He's
very important, but he may need to be a weekly guest because we're going to run out of material here based on his projections there for sports. I do have one very quick question because we have been asked questions on the text line. I just wanted to get to this one because I know people are curious about this.
Ahead.
Can you be infected with this twice or do you build up immunity?
Oh, good question.
Oh, such a good question. Such a good question. So, you know, there. First of all, I will say it's really hard with the internet today. There is so much information out there, and it's really hard to know what's right and what's not. This is a question we are still struggling with a little bit. I think we're very, very hopeful that for this round, this particular virus, that the vast, vast majority of people will respond to it the same way we respond to almost every other virus. And that is when you get it, you develop an immunity to it, and so that you can't get reinfected with it, okay? That's what we're hoping for. And I would imagine that for the vast majority of people, that will end up being true. There, you will hear cases about people who get it a second time because there is a very small proportion of the population that just naturally, they just have a tough time building up an immunity to any virus. And so there will be cases like that, and then if that is really the exception and not the rule, you can imagine how quickly that's going to get blown up on the internet.
Right.
So we don't know for sure yet, but we now are starting to be able to do the testing to be able to demonstrate, in fact, that we are developing good immunity to this, and that's the whole basis for developing a vaccine.
Benji, excellent job. I think you are now our show doctor. How do you feel about that?
Hey, I'm fine with that. Anytime. I will say I was a little bit disappointed that when I'm sitting there on hold, you're talking about all my boys leaving town here.
It's our turn to have the last laugh, okay? It's our turn.
Yeah, it sounds good.
All right. Thanks a lot, Benji. I appreciate you.
Yeah, you guys say stay safe.
All right. Thanks. There you go.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Take care. Yeah.
Well, it is funny that it's taken Zaslow all these years to reveal that he has family in Boston.
Yeah. No, that's not true. I've said that before. I've totally
Very
said
Boston.
That. I've totally said
Very
that.
Boston.
I've stayed with him. I stayed with him when I saw Pearl Jam up there at Fenway.
I don't think I knew that.
So, again, that's my cousin. He's Dr. Benjamin Raby. He is the chief of the Division of Pulmonary – the chief –
I know,
Division
he's
of Pulmonary
a very
Medicine
big deal,
at
this,
Boston's Children's
this
Hospital.
Benji, as you call him.
He also teaches at Harvard. Yeah, that's very unprofessional
that's
of me, right?
Very unprofessional.
Well, he's my
but
cousin.
That's
fine. I don't call him doctor, okay? He's
Dr.
my cousin.
That's Dr. Benji to you.
Yeah, you know? All right, so there you go. Again, he knows what he's talking about there. Very important. All right, so thanks to him for spending a few minutes with us. That's a great question, though, because can you possibly get it twice?
Because there's this philosophy out there that I have seen also infectious disease experts discuss that what does happen here with these infectious diseases is that there is somewhat of a natural correction also because as people get infected, then they build up an immunity. And as more people get infected, then there's an immunity. So at some point here anyways, there's a natural slowing of transmittance of viruses because of the immunity. But with COVID-19, there seems to be conflicting information about whether you would actually build up an immunity to it or not.
I told you.
Most medical experts believe you would.
I've told you. It was such a weird thing when I was a kid growing up before they had a vaccine for chickenpox. When I was growing up, so we're talking 35 years ago, okay, if someone you knew, kid had chickenpox, we had like a chickenpox party. Where
yeah, that was the 80s, baby. That was
wild
times.
You'd bring your
times
kids over to that house
to
so that they could also get the chickenpox so they just get it out of
now
the way.
Now there's just a vaccine. Like, why didn't they just do that back
it
then?
It seemed so, I remember,
it's
it
like
seemed so
abuse.
Cruel.
It
I remember
is.
My mother having a conversation because our neighbor's daughter had chickenpox, and the thought was they were going to bring me over there to infect me. And I'm like 4 or 5 years old at this point. I'm like, this is awful. Like, you're going to bring me over there so I can get chickenpox also. Now, she didn't end up doing it. I ended up getting chickenpox when I was 17.
And
that really
got
sucked.
On a plane, yeah, flew
exactly.
home from Montreal.
But that's how we used to do it when we were young. We'd have chickenpox parties.
I remember my mom was a nurse. I got chickenpox when I was like 4 years old in the Bahamas. She's like, good. And I was like, what you mean good?
Yeah, what you mean
can't
good?
Can't get it again.
I had chickenpox. I remember very clearly. I was probably like 6. I got chickenpox, and my mom was overseas traveling in China. And my dad was out of town. And that was like a very traumatic experience for me because I didn't have my parents. And they definitely didn't bother to fly home for it.
Man, chickenpox.
They were like,
so
and
bad.
What?
See, we went through it. Now you're going through it. You'll be just fine.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.